Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
You've seen horrible things. An army of nightmare creatures. But they are nothing compared to what came before. What lies below. It's our task to placate the ancient ones. As it's yours to be offered up to them. Forgive us, and let us get it over with.
Engaging pheromone mists.
This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hello, and welcome to FilmSack. This is FilmSack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. I am Scott Johnson, joined today by Brian Honey Toes Dunaway.
Oh, you've been sucking them? Oh, hi.
Hi.
This week on FilmSack, we dye our hair with college horny blonde and pack some clean underwear before we punch in the Hemsworth's cousin's cabin coordinates into our dad's got a Winnebago GPS and get high for dying in the woods with this corporate mentality inspired horror comedy from 2011. Now screaming on HBO Max. Max, hey, I always feel like somebody's watching me. Or maybe it's just the drugs you slipped me. Also, don't do drugs. Just go ask Alice. Anywho. Ever since I was first supernaturally conjured into existence as a result of humanity's sins and then decades later placed into this corporate hell of a cubicle that is literally a cube suspended by dark magic and left waiting to be elevated to the surface, when I am summoned by the youth of today's society to act as a death-dealing cog in the wheel of the well-oiled machine of work-life balance of sacrifice and order, I have been asking myself just one question. Where's the shitter? I mean, should I poop in the corner? Not while that low-budget horror movie kid with teeth for a face is watching. I need a little more privacy than that. I got a shy colon. Randy, pipe in some of that Let's Split Up smoke, and let's get busy dying, and let us get it over with.
Where's the shitter? Amazing.
Shitter in the woods.
Yeah, nicely done. Also with us, Randy, I've never seen an Australian and a New Zealander get along so well. Jordan.
Aloha, Scott, Brian. Okay, here's the deal. As you all know, we're about to save the world again. We have to do this every 5 years on 5 continents, sending 5 innocents to their death. And I'm so excited. It's giving me 5 inches of... I'm going to stop myself right there because this is not about me having sex. It's about me watching people have sex for no well-stated reason, except that's what the demigods want. And we're made in their image or something. I don't know. Stop trying to make this make sense. And just get to work, people. We all need to put the evil back to sleep. And we're going to do that if you just follow my 3 simple steps. Number 1, We need to make it real easy for our subjects to figure out what's going on. It's no fun if we take basic precautions, like putting one of our invisible alien tech walls between the subjects and all the levels of the crazy zoo they aren't supposed to find. Boo. Number two, we need to make it real easy for the demon spawn in our subterranean crazy zoo to attack us here in these control rooms. Maybe build the control rooms right on top of the crazy zoo and forget about the alien tech walls for here too. Super smart, guys. Number three, and this is so important. Don't script this thing out so that it's foolproof. Yeah. Let's just skip rehearsals. Let's just wing it with the fate of humanity on the line. Yeah. Who's let's focus on gambling on a whiteboard and hazing the intern. Yeah. Hold on. Shut up. The red hotline phone is ringing. I'm just kidding. Screw that thing. Who's doing bumpers with me?
There's a real party in there, man. There's a real party in that office. Finally with us, Brian. He's never quite gotten over being stabbed to death by a unicorn ibbot.
It really did hurt, and that's the monster I really want to see more of. All right, so I got to apologize to people last week for playing a song, the Pina Colada song, that really, unfortunately, stuck in people's heads, and they were kind of stuck with that earworm all day long. So I'm totally not going to do that again this week.
Never.
And I'm totally not going to pick the song that everybody hates to hear this time of year for my film sack intro.
Oh, shit.
We're celebrating in the lab late last night when our eyes beheld a shocking sight. The virgin and the stoner had escaped their doom and somehow made their way to the control room.
They did the purge.
They did the monster purge.
The monster purge.
The nightmares started to surge.
They did the purge.
On us all they did converge.
The monster purge.
They did the monster purge. The mummies were wandering through the conference rooms, and the sexy witches were flying on their sexy brooms. The giant snake had eaten most of the security team, while Sawblade Head was figuring out the soda machine.
They did the purge.
They did the monster purge.
The monster purge.
The nightmares started to surge.
The monster purge.
Don't let your party diverge.
They did the purge.
They did the monster purge. The dragon bat was flying around.
In the purge.
The hell lord was going to town.
In the woods.
While the flying screaming Japanese girl was doing karaoke in the lounge. The scarecrows were hitting all the lab staff with corn. And killer clown was killing and honking his horn. While you wait for us to make cabin in the woods too, pay a visit to hell and tell them Sigourney sent you. You'll do the monster purge.
The monster purge.
On special effects we did splurge.
The monster purge.
Watch the Easter eggs emerge.
The monster purge.
They did the monster purge.
Well, that was good.
That was great.
Going to kick off the Halloween. It's October the 1st.
You know what, though?
Spooky season.
I will say that was kind. The only thing I loved that intro. The only thing that I didn't like about it is your background singer stuff was really, really awesome. And it made me very distracted. I couldn't wait to hear Brian go, "That monster purge." I just, purge. That was so good. Oh my God.
Recording that thing, all I could think of was a dude in a black onesie dancing with a pumpkin on his head.
Perfect.
Nice.
Oh, I love that guy. The greatest gift of all time.
Who doesn't love that guy?
He's amazing. Anyway, yes, Brian Dunaway is correct in his exclamation that we begin Sacktober today. It's literally the first of October. Yep. Yeah. First day, man. Planting our flag, having a great time this month. And we start with The Cabin in the Woods, which. Fake Scott Fletcher will now explain. All right? You might be a little different than you expect. Here you go. Enjoy.
The cabin in the woods.
Oh, my God.
Five friends go for a break at a remote cabin where they get more than they bargained for, discovering the truth behind the cabin in the woods. Lots of blood and swears, too. Oh, and some boobies.
Brian does Tina. One of my favorite voices.
Wow. Wow.
A lot of him today.
I just thought, you know, may as well use that a couple times.
That was actually one of my backing vocalists. The cabin. For my
the monster mash. I can hear it.
The monster purge.
That's amazing. Yeah, the movie is The Cabin in the Woods. This is 2011's film, as we've referred to already, directed by Drew Goddard, written by Joss Whedon and Drew Goddard, and starring your Chris Hemsworths, your Anna Hutchinsons, and your Kristen Connellys. This is all before Hemsworth's about to hit it, right?
This is, man. This is just very casual Hemsworth, right? It was not... Yeah. He was not, we weren't there for the Hemsworth.
Because that same, was it the same year or the next year we got the Red Dawn remake? And then right after that, he got, or he got cast as Thor during all this?
Right.
Or something?
Yeah. Must have been, this, the Thor was released this year, or I mean the year, the same year as this. It was released in 2011.
Oh, was it? Okay. I guess it depended on when you got the gigs or whatever.
Exactly, yeah. Right. One could have been early in the year, and then the other one could have been late. The Thor movie was just one they were able to scrabble together in a couple months.
but it did feel weird having a mega superstar in this movie that didn't seem like it should have a mega superstar.
There wasn't a mega superstar.
He wasn't.
Then, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But it felt like he still was.
Because Thor was later that year. So, you know, I remember at the time thinking, oh, that's that dude who played George Kirk briefly in the 2009 Star Trek.
Right.
And then
Bradley Whitford was, Sigourney Weaver, Bradley Whitford was probably the biggest star in this.
Yeah. Totally forgot Sigourney Weaver was in this. Forgot.
Yeah. That's my main question is, isn't this a Bradley Whitford, Richard Jenkins movie? Like,
kinda, the five
subjects of their experiment, or not experiment, but whatever, the five subjects are important, but they could have been anybody. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like they're like, in fact, the movie even tells you this is like versions of this are happening in other parts of the world. By the way, we are going to spoil. It's such a spoilable movie. I'm so glad I didn't know anything about it going in.
Oh yeah.
Oh really? No wait. Yeah. Is this your first watching? Yeah.
It's great.
Oh wow.
That is awesome. Cool. I can't wait to hear what you think.
Because I didn't know anything about it, and it's so spoilable that I was like, I was asking in our Discord yesterday, like, I wish there was a way for us to put something on the very top of this episode. Like, we're going to spoil this in our greetings. Like, we're going to spoil it so hard because it's like it. I don't know if it. I want to talk with you guys. Does the movie depend on the twists and turns?
Well, like, okay. This is funny you say that, because when I went in the first time, saw it in theaters in 2011, I think I've seen it. This is my fourth time or something. When I first saw it, my memory of my first viewing was the reveals about all the stuff happening in the background and this weird ritual every year that this kind of corporate thing was doing. I thought that was way later in the movie, but it's literally like right away. It's, the first two actors
the
you see.
Scene, yeah.
Yeah.
The title card even.
But you don't know that. You don't know that that's what they're leading. You're thinking, this is some kind of story on the outside.
It's still extremely good at what it does for what it does, but I forgot that like early on when they're just driving their Winnebago truck van thing through the mountain pass, that bird slams into that wall, and when that bird smacks into that fake wall, that right there is like, oh no, wait, isn't that later? That's when he hits it with a motor. You know, in my mind, I thought they let way less hints happen early
hide anything. You're just finding all the pieces and putting them together as quickly as you can. They definitely do not try to hide nothing.
Yeah,
they just put it all on display.
So I guess it's still a puzzle, right? Like, there's still all these ideas of like what's going on, and ultimately you don't know about all these monsters and this underground, you know, ultimate evil they're trying to appease and everything. So I'm jealous of your getting to see this for the first time, because it's a really fun thing to see.
It's a good new surprise.
It
is. Right?
It's the fun of the film. And there's this like fun in the making of the film. You can see people having fun. Like it's almost let it come through in the characters. So once I realized, oh, this is a black comedy. I was like, I wonder if there's ever going to be a moment, especially when this Fran Kranz guy, I'll bet he lets on that, you know, that the actor knows he's in a black comedy. And it was like, that was okay. I was okay with them. You know what I mean? With them hamming it up, Bradley Whitford and Richard Jenkins really pushed the envelope, you know?
Yeah.
I was curious how you would feel if like, I kind of already knew what was going to happen. When I first saw it, I knew some people already kind of let me know that it was different. It was different than what they were necessarily advertising. Because if you go in as a true horror aficionado and going, oh, sweet, they're doing an update for, you know, that Cabin in the Woods kind of slasher film. And then you get this. I don't know how long you'd take you to stop being butthurt to go, Okay, this is a really clever idea.
Yeah, I don't know. I wonder about that. Were there people who are like, wait a minute, this is like the setup for an Evil Dead movie. Even the trap door and the freaking thing opening on its own, that's ripped right out of that. And it was obviously, in a lot of ways, there's an homage going on there. But if you're a true, you're like a true horror fan, and this starts not painting by those numbers, and you start to see, oh, wait, there's something
more. Not just not painting by those numbers, but fake, like making fun of those numbers.
Making fun of the numbers? Yeah. We're going to put a three over here. What do you think about that, you weirdos?
Exactly.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. I hadn't really thought about that. Like, that's the whole point, though, right? And the writing of, you know, regardless of how anyone feels about Joss Whedon these days, his writing lends really well to this. It's very...
His character stuff has always been good,
right? Interactive characters.
A little bit of a knowing wink to the audience.
Yeah. Whether it's TV shows, whether it's you know, his shows or like, you know, the first Avengers movie, he's really good at that. And it shows here. I think this movie depends on that working. I don't think it works without it.
These are great characters. As a matter of fact, sometimes you forget they're playing with the trope so much that it's like, wow, I don't think they showed a single booby. You're like, I don't think they showed anything that you would usually expect to see in these horror movies that kind of make them, you know, taboo for a lot of young kids and stuff. But they did a little bit, but not very much. Most of it was just disgusting stuff.
You got two boobs.
It's a rated R movie.
And, it's still a rated R movie. Lots of blood.
And there is nudity. I'm curious. I saw the nudity.
Did you watch this on Disney Plus?
No. So it was so brief. It was like in the woods. It was in the woods. Kevin Bacon showed
the boobies
Bacon
in the woods.
In Friday the 13th, and we saw. I mean, come on. Very light fare.
But at least they touched on it, right? It's like the pheromone mist. They're ripping on that whole idea of like, all right, we got to warm up the forest. This is where the teenagers go to die because they're going to go have sex in the woods, and then out of the woods is going to come some creature who, by the way, redneck zombie with a chain, basically a chain weapon with a half a trap on the other end of it.
Oh,
good
I
Lord.
Love the bear trap weapon. That is such a, that is a great weapon.
Yeah,
on
was
a
awesome.
Chain. That is so cool.
That was really awesome.
People in the back.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's got to be, you know, obviously it's some supernatural thing where the jaws of the bear trap open as he's throwing it so they can close on whatever it
is. I could feel
them.
My true horror fans forgiving a little bit when they brought out that badass weapon and like, all right, okay.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Scott, was that your favorite kill in the movie?
Oh, man. I meant to keep better track of favorite kills. I think my favorite kill was probably the unsuspecting scientist standing out in the hallway and that bat thing just
just goes right through him and the wall.
Yeah, something about that cracked me up.
It's the escape psychopath picking up the lab dude, throwing him over the side of the second floor railing, and the snake eating him before the tank team.
That snake was a problem. I'm telling you right now. All the other
snakes
stuff
are
usually
a problem.
You could find a way to maybe wipe out the rest of whatever was going on there, but that snake, holy shit, dude!
For your puny weapons are no match for a giant snake.
Yeah,
Bradley Whitford's. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I was gonna say for me the best kill was Richard Jenkins because he gets jumped by this creature that has a blowhole in its back.
No, that's Whitford.
Oh, that was Bradley Whitford.
Yeah, that's Whitford. Yeah, that's the merman.
That's the merman he'd been talking about the whole film.
With the blowhole blowing his blood out, that one.
Blowhole. So blood hole. Funny. I paused the movie. I was laughing so hard. And I'm all by myself. No one would watch a movie like this with me. And I'm all by myself laughing so hard because someone had thought to do creature design where that blows the
It was fan-freaking fantastic.
Richard Jenkins got lucky. He ended up just accidentally walking into her knife or her defense mechanism.
He got off easy.
He slowly died in the hallway or whatever.
Yeah. I hated Jesse Williams Holden's character, the one that's kind of like the voice of the conscience
the audience connection, right?
He was kind of like, I don't know about all this, you guys. Is this the right thing to do? And he just kind of like got ate in a corner. And I was like,
he got stabbed in the car, remember? Got it right through his throat. You talking about Jesse Williams?
Oh, I'm sorry. I did say Jesse Williams.
You mean
I'm
Brian
sorry.
White. You mean Truman.
Brian White was talking about. Right. Talking about the guy.
Yeah, Truman, the Truman guy.
They both have dreamy eyes. That's all I know.
He's this guy.
Grab a bucket.
For me. He is way, because he is, you guys are right. He's supposed to be us, right? He's our anchor in the
audience
film.
Connection. But he's also such a trope. of this this thing. And by the way, please don't hammer the trope button throughout this entire episode. This is a movie about movie tropes, right?
Mm, right.
And so like we could just anything we're talking about, right?
It's, you can go exactly. It's a right. This is a trope alert free zone because it's when everything's a trope, nothing's
I'll tell you what, I'll play one. That covers the rest of the episode. All right.
Brian White's character is a neutral third party, right, which is so weird. Like, it's like you just keep wanting him to react and he never will because that's how that trope works.
Right.
He is just there to observe and report, basically.
Right. Right.
And I just love that they kept putting him. He's just standing there. All these weirdos are partying because they just saw live sex on cam. And he's just standing there like, what are you people doing?
Yeah, right. It's such a hey, what if kind of discussion of what if we took all these ideas about these people being killed in a remote cabin and we're still going to make it gnarly, right? It's going to be really bloody and violent and all the trappings of she sleeps around, so she's going first, and Hemsworth's kind of big dumb jock, and this other guy's smarter and a little more helpful, and Kristen Connolly looks like the survivor to me, you know, like all of these things. They play those up like they're the movie, but then they do this subversion in the background. It's really smart. And I can't believe they wrote this in like 3 days, according to trivia.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. That's whole screenplay in like 3 days. And it said that both Goddard, the director, and Joss Whedon were coming off failed projects, which I tried to figure out what that was, and I couldn't. And they were both just like, oh, we got to do something dumb or fun or whatever. And this is what they came up with. And
I think that's what inspired this movie, is it being so brief. They didn't overthink it. They had a kernel of a good idea and then did the improv thing where, and then 3 days later they come out and it's like, oh, this works really well.
Yeah.
And I think the brevity of it really helped it.
The marketing's good too. The poster is so great.
Yeah, it really is, because it's vague and it you know, once you've seen the movie, you're like, oh, okay, I see what they're doing there.
Yeah.
But before that, you're like, oh man, what are they? They're in some sort of Rubik's Cube of a house.
Right. Is this Hellraiser in the woods?
Hellraiser, except instead of pins, he's got saws, and instead of a cube, he's got a sphere.
Everything else is the same. I like those. They obviously Hellraiser fans, obviously, lots of nods to that series.
Oh, all over the place. A lot of these creatures and stuff are old, new, and everything else. But I liked him in particular because I texted it to you guys, but he looks like Matt Frewer. He looks
like
Max Headroom.
Max Headroom.
Yeah,
I really could have
blades through his face.
I could have sworn it. I would have gone if you guys said.
I mean,
yes,
can you imagine them doing a Matt Frewer film and not letting him talk? Because half of the fun of Matt Frewer is hearing his weird, you know.
No, you're right.
His weird voice.
You're right.
But still.
A lot of great things about a lot of these characters, they had them in these cages just with these, you know, these predator stares on their face. And you're like, oh, I want to see him get out because I want to see that shit. Yeah. I want to see what he's going to do with those blades. I can't wait. But most of the kills at the place were just bats and flying shit that you just didn't really catch. It was just a bunch of CGI.
Yeah, stuff. It was kind of chaos in there. But
According to the I went down a deep rabbit hole with the cabininthewoods.fandom.com.
Oh, yeah.
I already shared with you guys, the American ritual consists of the following specific rules and lists all the rules that the American version of the ritual. Awesome. The rituals are different in different countries.
Yeah.
The saw blade head dude, the pinhead knockoff, is named Fornicus, Lord of Bondage and Pain, and he's one of the.
Perfect. He's a Cenobite.
He's a Cenobite. He's listed on the whiteboard. You know, the gambling whiteboard.
Nice. Yeah, the gambling whiteboard's a great thing to talk about too.
It is, and Greg Zach is the actor who plays him.
Oh, okay, he had a good look for it. I would watch a Fornicus movie. I'm telling you right now.
It'd be such a Cenobite fest, right? Though, I mean, it's just Hellraiser, which I love, but I do love the design. Is just so beautiful.
That's what I'm saying. Do something almost. Yeah. I don't know. But it would have to be a full parody, but you could have some fun with it. Or just, you know, get him out in the sequel or something, which we've been promised for years and has never happened. And I don't know why.
Yeah,
Randy, you were trying to say something earlier, and I cut you off.
Words. There's so much. There's so much here. I guess what you were just reminding me of is that not only is this movie about tropes, you know, this movie comes 20 years after Scream, right? So they have to they have to be different. And it's so not only is it about tropes in a different way, it subverts a bunch of them. There's a lot of times where you have expectations as the viewer and the movie's like, nope, we're going to do it the opposite of that. Mm-hmm. And I just thought that was really fun too. Mm-hmm. You know, like the best example I can think of is when Jesse Williams goes into his room and he's like, ooh, there's a scary painting. I will take that down. Yeah. And then he realizes he's going to be able to see Kristen Connolly naked here in a minute.
Yeah. Yep.
And you're like, okay, so this is the lurid part of a scary movie, right? With teenagers, they're all in their 30s.
These are college students, right? So that's
right. They're college.
Because one of them slept with her college professor.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
She's not a virgin.
They're still playing older. They're still playing younger, but they're older for sure.
Yeah.
But then the movie has him, Holden, has Holden go, nope, I'm stopping this right now. I'm not going to allow this to happen. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, subverting the trope. Interesting. Yeah, I wonder where. And like, it's because the movie knows that you've seen scary movies and that doesn't need to.
But then
to
they subverted the trope again because you thought Jesse Williams' character Holden and Dana, Kristen Connolly's character, were going to be the two survivors. Mm-hmm. That completely got upended because he's a good guy. You want him to succeed, and then he gets a thing through the throat. And I got to rely on
the ones
Stoner.
Who are tainted. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
The teenagers that sin are the ones who get killed, and he never sinned. He was a good guy.
Right.
Good guy.
That's what it was. These kids were actually good, studious kids, but they were being manipulated into being the tropes. And so early on, they're fighting those tropes because those aren't the characters they're evolving into once they're drugged and manipulated it into the situation.
Yeah.
So,
and Marty, who's, you know, our Shaggy in the story.
You love him.
He's our Jason Biggs in this movie.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. I can see that. Yeah.
He made me laugh a lot. He had
Franz Kranz. Is that his name? Was his name
Franz Kranz? Yeah, weird.
Francis Kranz
from Kansas. He has a bong made out of a coffee cup thing.
Yes, it's like one of those collapsible coffee cups, except it extends to ridiculous.
Yeah, I looked this up.
Size.
So there was trivia in the IMDb as well, but I went to confirm it. It's a thermal coffee mug bong combo. That is fully functional as a mug and a bong if you stretch it out.
And
the prototype costs $5,000 to make that shit.
Wow. That changes this character completely. Well, of course, all these kids are super rich. Even though they're driving an old Winnebago, they're still super rich.
And what's the point of making it functional? For, you know, as a prop master, why do you need it to be a functional coffee mug?
I don't know.
Because I'll bet you that was a good $2,000 of that $5,000 was making sure it was liquid, structural integrity to not let liquid out.
Yeah, that cracked me up though. Him collapsing that thing, I'm like, oh my lord!
It was a good gag. It was worth it. It was worth it.
Yeah, but he's good.
I want to remind you, this is our third Fran Kranz movie.
Really?
Yeah, we saw him in Matchstick Men where he played Slacker Boyfriend. I think that's funny.
Sure.
Imagine that that's on your character list. And then we saw him in The Village. He and Jesse Eisenberg were like the two around 20 years old, like guys who were always doing pranks and stuff.
He's been top guest.
Lookout guys.
Yeah, there's this early scene where they're playing a game where you stand with your back to the woods.
Yeah,
and see how long you can make it before you freak out.
He's one of those guys. Wow.
Yeah.
Christoph Crane. Sorry.
Back in Dollhouse, you know, obviously Joss Whedon has a swimming pool filled with people that he just ladles out into every movie.
Yeah.
Along with Amy Acker, but he was the tech guy in Dollhouse that made sure all the dolls performed.
Dollhouse didn't do better, right? I enjoyed Dollhouse.
No, Dollhouse was great, but I forgot he was in that. You're right. He was the nerd.
Yeah,
he knew all the shit.
He plays it well, right? And he plays it hilariously here. I really love that his drug use counteracts the corporate mind control that they're trying to do, and ends up destroying the world, right?
Yeah,
that's the whole thing. He's actually the harbinger of doom, even though we literally have a harbinger of doom.
An actual harbinger of doom.
Right,
well,
right.
I just want to argue that because the movie makes it really, really clear that corporate ineptitude is what brings down the whole world.
It is the corporate, but he's the harbinger. He kind of calls it early on, saying that
Because his weed was so powerful, man. He could see past it all.
Yeah, I mean, basically, yeah, exactly. This is the most pro-weed film I think we've seen in a long time. Yeah. It doesn't feature Seth Rogen.
Right. This movie could have steered into that farther, and I'm surprised it didn't, because there was this whole Office Space subplot where they could have spent a lot of time making us laugh at people miscommunicating and misunderstanding what the other department's doing and so on. They kind of just like played it like, oh, you know, Japan regularly fails. Really? That's a concern, because they're trying to save the world. You know,
I think the trope there, and that's what makes that kind of funny. And they almost got rid of all that Japanese style.
Stuff. I love that. I love.
Yeah, it says they almost cut it all.
That stuff.
But their whole point there, I think, is at least this is my impression. Maybe I'm wrong, but it was like the reason they keep failing over there is Japanese horror as a genre almost always has everyone survive it. That matters.
Right.
So they solve by surrounding it, doing the thing, and then getting the spirit into the frog. Like that sounds like a atypical Japanese plot in one of their horror movies. Right. And so I think they struggle over there because the tropes don't work as well. Like over here, we're just like, of course that guy's going to die. Of course that girl's dying next, you know, like.
Of course, the American opinion, of course, that's corporate.
The thing is, I think if you look at this from a comedy about like Office Space, then it's saying that the organizers of the stuff in Japan are failing. Right, and that's just like, that's kind of wrong. Like I would imagine that, you know, they are the most, diligent and, intelligent and so forth. So it's just a weird little part of this movie that it doesn't steer further into the corporate talk,
which is I think in that, from what I read in the trivia, that was why they were thinking about cutting it. So your brain's in the right place, because they felt like, well, is making the audience think too much about what this takes in other places. Why don't we focus here? You know, sometimes it's fun to go bigger. And I think they put in just enough. It was just enough for me to realize, oh, okay, so they're doing this everywhere. This isn't just here.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't have a bunch of Japanese schoolgirls go to a empty cabin in the woods somewhere in Japan, because it doesn't match their tropes.
Schoolgirls.
Yeah, and it would be
school.
It's wraiths and rings and weird girl down the hall coming at you too fast shit that they like over there.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Face. Apparently they don't like hair covering the face. It really freaks them out over there.
Exactly. and lots of hovering.
Yeah. Right. Lots of hovering. Holy shit.
In,
the hovering.
In night shirts. No, thank you. Night shirts. No, thank you.
Hospital clothing. Yeah. Night shirts. Exactly.
But that's fun to play with those things. Right. I think they did a good job of it here and made me appreciate it. I think this feels like one of those movies that just shouldn't work.
Right.
Like it just should be a mess.
Easily could have failed.
Yeah. And then just it's the right writing, the right people, the right timing, maybe the right freedom from the studio. I don't know what all comes into place, but.
And one big part is the fact that the ritual itself can be super vague and explain a lot. Like you can explain, all right, how did we convince these kids that Hemsworth has a cousin who has this cabin? Because that's, you know, I don't think he's got a cousin.
I don't think he has a cousin. Yeah. Do they implant something there too?
Exactly. Yeah. Something to make them go to this, you know, this place and all of these things can just be kind of hand waved as part of the ritual. The old gods give us the ability to make some of these things happen exactly the way they happen. So
I was
able to explain away everything except for, you know, where the creatures poop, because there was a bunch of creatures. I still that bothered me. I was like, well, you can't just have like a bunch of evil just like in boxes.
Especially that giant snake. I mean, that giant snake has got to lay some giant poops.
Yeah,
I think it's all supernatural. Like, you know, what keeps the ghostly wraith screaming wraith guy
inside the cage?
I think it's just, you know, it's pim particles, basically.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, they don't explain
the equivalent of pim particles. They don't have to explain it because the ritual.
Because they're
ritual,
not gonna.
It's the ritual. Yeah, and we've been doing
this
for so long.
It's in that box. The pim particles.
But you know what serves that really well is the nonchalance of the business end of it. The kind of this is business as usual. We're taking bets. Everyone's laughing. Oh, my house, my cabinets at home. Like they're acting like it's not any big deal, because they've been doing this for hundreds of years, maybe thousands, and this has just evolved into this. That goes a long way to make you forget about some of those details and not get too hung up on them, right?
Yeah. Totally.
I liked how they removed
the wolf from from Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I like how they removed all the religious stuff and just said it was all corporate. You know, if you're going to streamline something, if you're going to streamline murdering people so society can get past past those things, that's a brilliant idea.
By not actively saying that's the devil down there.
Yeah, they're having crosses everywhere.
Nary a crucifix in sight, although I did wonder if maybe in the European outfit, right?
Yeah, there were all of these, what were they doing? Right.
Maybe they had like vampires, right?
The Swedish ritual relies on a natural disaster. Usually a large volcanic eruption is shown on the monitors that display the progress of foreign rituals using footage from the film Dante's Peak.
Oh my lord. Somebody's been on Phantom and they can't get off.
Yes, I told you that. They get a lot of this from the novelization. And so it's like, oh, there's some other kind of, all right, this is written quote-unquote lore stuff. I don't know how much the novelization oral gets to just play with stuff.
Written, yeah.
But, so the Swedish ritual is a parody of the disaster film genre, like the Japanese one is a parody of things like Ringu. Yeah. And
I love that.
The Argentinian ritual is Giant Ape.
Oh.
Plays on giant monster films.
Is that a thing?
That would have been fun.
And the Spanish ritual is a parody of the gothic horror genre.
Oh, nice.
I was hoping one of the five was African. I think that might be. Yeah.
What do they do with the Danish? Because the Danish have some pretty weird ideas.
The Danes. What do the Danes do?
I don't know. What's not listed on the...
My finger is stuck in the dam. Oh, the dike. Yeah. No, what is it? I forget.
It's stuck in the dam dike.
It's like a finger in the dike.
Yeah. Stick...
that's what still he did. That's how he
said. No, you're totally right. No, you're totally right. It's just a thing I hear and then I giggle. I can't help it.
Yeah, I can't help it.
Some other fun trivia here. I already mentioned that. This is according to Drew Goddard in some commentary. He says inspiration for the movie came from his own upbringing in Los Alamos, New Mexico, a place filled with scientists and coworkers, all going about their business and living seemingly routine and ordinary lives, even though they were building nukes that could potentially destroy the world. He talks about this in the DVD special features. I could see that. That's some fun inspiration.
Which we all have.
Yeah. Like we all have.
We do. Because somebody sent it in. I can't remember who it was, though. It's been years.
It's been years. Oh, yeah. Whoever, by the way, I haven't heard from him. So I don't know if they're still around or whatever. But
so if you're listening, please tell us.
Thank you, though, whoever you are.
Oh, yeah. God, yes. Yeah.
We finally got to watching your desk.
The street shipment. Right.
And that's how I originally watched the film, was from that DVD. It was years ago. When I got it in, I was like, oh, I want to watch this. And
so wait, you didn't wait for FilmSec? Like when somebody sent in FilmSec movies, you didn't wait for films? Oh, my gosh. Shame on you.
Forget you guys.
Yeah.
You got time for that.
Oh, I found the actual notes on Hemsworth. Sorry. Beep, beep, beep. This will clear up the time frame. During production, MGM saw the dailies of scenes where Chris Hemsworth instructs his friends. Based on those production dailies, so they're in the middle of producing this film, they signed him for Red Dawn 2012. 2 days later,
good call.
While still in production, Hemsworth was chosen to play the lead in Thor 2011. So this was a big moment, dude. He's out there in his trailer. Knock, knock, knock. What's going on? Oh, hey, you got the Thor deal. Cool. Natalie Portman, hubba hubba. All right, let's go. You know?
I bet this story will stick around the whole series. Oh, it kind of came back. Okay.
Yeah, it kind of came back.
Thor, Natalie
Portman. Yeah, that's fine how it all came. I'm fine with
it. I loved it. I love they went back to it. I love that.
Because she was she disappeared in what?
Not Dark World, but the
Ragnarok too, right?
World on Ragnarok, yeah.
Yeah. And then came back in the newer one. Okay, we have to get this out of the way now, because if we don't, I won't be able to read this trivia.
Gross.
What gross got out the most?
Oh, God, that's so easy for me.
Yeah, I mean, is it the taxidermy makeout session?
100%.
No matter.
100%. Yeah. There's no other answer.
Yeah, that's gross. No matter.
It's disgusting. It even says, so here's the trivia that maybe lightens the load a little, but when Jules kisses the blonde girl from New Zealand, kisses the wolf's head in the wall or on the wall, the wolf's tongue, it's an actual taxidermied wolf, by the way.
Really?
The wolf's tongue is covered in powdered sugar to give it a dusty look, but also to make it more tolerable for her to lick it. Dude, that grossed me out so bad.
That's even worse, knowing that she was getting to enjoy. Oh, yeah. This is good.
Also, why wouldn't you use a fake one? I don't know why the trivia claims it's real.
It's probably a lot easier. If they spend $5,000 making a collapsible bong thermos, I can't imagine how much it would cost to make a fake wolf taxidermy. Yeah, just get one, wash it off really good, really especially that tongue, and sprinkle some powdered sugar
in,
on there.
In a very fast-paced and relatively short movie, that sequence seemed like it played for 10 minutes. Like,
yeah, it did.
It was so much close-up of this actress kissing this mouth.
It was supposed to make you uncomfortable, and it did.
It really did. Yeah, 100%.
It did its job. Hey,
something that grossed me out is the fact that I just pet my cat, and she had urine on her tail. So give me 10 seconds. I'm going to go wash my hands really quick.
Oh, that's perfect. That's what you want.
That's gross in the woods right there, my friend.
My urine tail, my least favorite animated family film. Urine tail. Not a fan. Not a fan of that. But yeah, that's making out with that thing is gross, and I don't care, you know, who you are and how much you block it out of your mind. I know, you know, movies are magic. It's fake. It's all just whatever, but I cannot imagine she was enjoying that.
I don't even care if it's sterilized plastic. I'm still just being that mouthy with anything seems bad idea, especially on a shared set. I mean, I'd be over there spraying that thing down with alcohol before started action, you know, or something.
Surely they always give you the actor the preparation, right? So it's like it's like you're gonna put this this gun in your mouth, and they give it like you. Here's the prop. You clean it how you wish to.
I would hope so, right? They don't just shove it in your face and say, "Here, put this
Purell your own prop."
Yeah.
Because why would they? I guess I don't know. If I was an actor and they said, "Hey, we're putting this gun in your mouth," I would want to be in charge of making sure it was good.
Exactly. You should always be in charge of anything that goes in your mouth. That's just a no-brainer. Yeah, that's a no-brainer. Yeah.
God, I wish we had titles for our folks.
Yeah, I know, right? Because that's an amazing clip. There. Somebody isolate that. But I'm with you. I know things on movie sets have been different in the past, and people didn't always have, you know, good conditions to work in, or, you know, fair conditions or whatever. But if you're going to tell me, hey, I need you to make out with that tongue and that inside of that freaking taxidermy wolf's head, I would go, all right, I will need to spend some time with this wolf head. And
I need to have one of those disclaimers where it's like, this wolf head has not, left your sight the whole time, right? Yeah. I need to make sure.
Right, exactly. Your luggage has been in your control the entire time. Same thing with this damn wolf head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I'm taking this wolf head out to lunch first. I'm going to ask it what its favorite, you know, what it likes to do on its days off.
I'd like to get to know the wolf head. Yeah, it's part of my process.
It's freaking foul. Another one here, it says, I already told you guys this. They read the script in 3 days. I'm not a script writer, all right? I don't know what the process is. Could that mean they just had a quick idea that weekend? And then
I'm sure they didn't finish hammering everything out.
Okay.
Like that
right.
Day,
probably wrote the plot in 3 days. Screenplay took a lot longer. And
Do you think most people work backwards? This is just a weird question about writing that I don't understand. I hear a lot of authors say this, with the exception of Stephen King, which might explain why his endings are so bad sometimes.
Yeah.
true story. But these authors and screenwriters often, you'll hear anyway, a lot of them will start at the end with whatever the resolution is and then build out all their act stuff and all their big crescendos and character stuff, but they always have the end in mind. Yeah. And that sounds hard. I don't know how you do that.
Write the end first? Don't you do that all the time when you're writing comics?
No.
Because you write the punchline first, right?
No, hardly ever. That's what's weird.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I feel like I'm doing it wrong.
I mean, you've got the punchline in your head, though, as far as what it's going to be and stuff, right?
It depends. Sometimes when I sit down and do one for, like I did this recent one with a bunch of fish, and the whole point was to make fun of this character named Terry, who's one of those deep sea fishes with the weird light hanging out in front of him from his tail.
And
how distracted he is by it.
Whatever that is. Yeah.
And when I started that one, I had already kind of drawn all the characters, but I wasn't sure how I was going to have them interact. And so I think I'm doing it wrong. And I always have.
You're not doing it wrong.
Everybody's got their own process. Yeah, sure.
Charles Schulz used to do the same thing. That's how he said he wrote his. He would just sit down and start, you know, having the characters talk. And then it would end up wherever naturally. But a lot of writers and cartoonists do write the punchline first and work their way back. That's just easy.
Plotters too. Right? So like we're talking about pantsers versus plotters, right?
Yeah.
And I have always personally, like if I'm writing something, I'm a pantser. I'm like Stephen King. I'm like, there's something here I need to start writing and it'll uncover itself. Mm-hmm. But like most writers are surely plotters. How could you end up with a satisfying conclusion if you didn't plot?
Yeah, I'm a plotter.
From the end first.
Yeah. Yeah. I always think of the end first and then how we got there.
So if anyone out there does screenwriting or anything, I'd love to hear what people's methods are, because I find that super interesting and kind of kind of impenetrable. I don't understand the magic of it and how you do
it. Well, as a comic writer, because you're both an artist and a writer, like, do you often feel really comfortable that you know the whole thing before you start? Like, I realize a comic is a very, very small amount of writing, but like let's say it's four panels.
I kind of know when I'm going in. I'm like, all right, I'm going to have these interactions, and they're going to come out to be sort of like this. But oftentimes, what will happen is when I actually get to it, it will change.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm sure that's true of a lot of writing, right? Like you're,
and I bet that's the same. I mean, you know, you probably know going into a screenplay, going into a script, this is where I want things to end up, and then as you're writing, you write all these branches and all these things that like, oh yeah, it would be much more effective if for the ending, if they see this first or this foreshadowing or this other thing here happens. And so I think, you know, you probably know a real skeletal bare bones thing going in.
Spooky,
and
it just the way you just described that.
Inappropriate for this, you know, for Sacktober.
Yeah, I like that.
But then you just flesh it out again. Ooh, yeah. As you
but that's pretty much how most people would. Some people do it organically, like Randy was saying, with the pantsers, and some people do it with methods.
It's like it's like a painting or like an illustration a little bit. You start, some people will sketch big shapes and then work their way in. And the big shapes are to represent your final compositions, you know, your negative spaces and all that. And then you work toward detailing it out and filling it out. But other people, they will start with a point on the page and just start building a thing. And it's amazing when they're done.
I call that doodling. That's what whenever I say I've been doodling, that's what I'm always referring to. It's like, I just put my pencil in this piece of paper and just wherever the adventure took me to, but that's, I don't consider that my final product usually, but that's just, you know,
but that's my point is like, I can get to the same end result with a big broad strokes and then tightening it up.
Amazing. You get it done.
And somebody else will do it slowly and work from the middle out, and it'll be even better. And that process couldn't be more different. Like, they're getting detailed immediately. Like, their detail started with pen one, and mine started after two sketches, five erases, and now let's go.
Do you work mazes backwards or like God intended?
He hates mazes. Scott hates mazes.
He hates mazes. Hate them.
Didn't he work with just that's a maze. I'm not doing it.
Yeah, let me tell you what I do. I go into a restaurant like a Denny's, and they want to bring over like kids things, and there's a maze on there. I rumple that up and throw it at the server. That's what I do.
Good plan.
Take so your no damn place, Matt. And
no one's going to control you like corporate America did in this movie. I don't blame
puppets.
You.
We're puppets.
We are. In the end, we're puppets. That's right.
Puppets. I'm not going in the basement either.
My least favorite scene in a horror movie is the maze scene in The Shining, because it's a maze.
Yeah, so good. Really?
I freaking hate hedge mazes.
It's very stressful, isn't it? It's very
least favorite part in any Harry Potter film too.
I don't like that part. I don't like the then The Witcher, which is a game I revere and love. Witcher 3. Right. There is a huge segment where I got to do a bunch of shit in a maze. Freaking burn that in a fire. That whole piece of that game.
Size? The Atari 2600 game adventure maze? In that labyrinth.
Well, okay. Now, if you're giving me like a first person sort of, I'm walking, ooh, I discover a thing, ooh, this door opens, you know, and I'm making a map behind me and that sort of thing, I'm fine with that. That's fine. But when it's like, when you're like a top down, and it's thing where you're like, well, your eyeballs got to fall. I hate those. I don't know why I hate them.
You know what? I don't
freaking hate.
You know what? I don't think a maze is a maze when you can actually just climb over the wall of the maze or walk through it. So I'm usually like topiary mazes and stuff, like the head in The Shining. I'm like, whatever. Corn maze, don't scare me. Yeah. I'm through your corn maze, brother. I'm coming out.
I don't like corn mazes. Don't scare me. They just irritate me.
Right.
Next weekend, we're going to this thing in Lakewood called Cider Days, and they have what's called a hay bale maze. And I saw a photo of this thing, and it's one layer of hay bales arranged in a maze on the ground. So you basically are just walking. You can just look around. You just step over if you want out of this thing.
It's a maze on the honor system. I don't care for that.
That's so funny.
Not a single maze in this movie, by the way, right?
By the way, comedy demands that when you're at Cider Days, you post and say, we're in Cider Days.
That's how it works.
Insider.
Nice. Love it.
Dunaway, there are no mazes in this movie, but it implies
a corporate place.
Yeah, it implies masery, right?
Right.
Like masery is implied.
They're being corralled, right? Are they puppets or are they people being pushed around in a maze of sorts? Also, I didn't understand how they were. There was another thing that I didn't understand about the movie was at first I thought, oh, they're killing the people and then they're taking that blood. And they have like, you know, where they got killed was a pool where they could get the blood.
Siphon
what were
the
they
blood.
Pushing? They were dripping the blood down into those.
The monument. There's a monument to the five archetypes.
Right.
Right.
But the deal is you have to have the first get bloodied first and the last get bloodied last. That's the rule.
Whose blood is that though? Because it's not the blood of the people apparently.
No,
because
it's just stored blood.
Symbolic.
I love how
you've been on the fandom page for
I've
sure.
Been on the
oh,
fandom
it's stored
page.
Blood.
Does it say it in here? I think it does. Let's see.
It has to be O type negative.
Here we go. With each death, sacrificial blood must be poured into stone tablets that symbolize the individual's archetype, thus signifying their punishment and death. So it's just a jar of blood that they
just
kept
anybody's
around.
Anybody's blood.
Okay, that makes sense. Sorry. I thought I also had the question because they never really made it clear if you know the minute the girl died in the woods and they cranked all that up and the blood came.
Right.
The first time we saw that,
you think
I thought, are they pulling it from the ground? They got special siphons.
Fetching Hemsworth's body from the canyon just to.
You know, corporate America is having like a blood drive and they just keep that blood. You know, that's what's really happening.
Here's what I don't understand, though. See, and this is why this movie's so good. It doesn't make you ask this while it's happening. But later you start asking questions. And my question is, if the goal is just to sacrifice them all, what you do, you can do the ruse all the way up to the point that they're at the cabin. Then a trapdoor opens, all five of them, three of them, four of them, whatever they are, fall down into a tube and slide into that room. And now you off them one at a time in the order it's meant to be.
There's red tape, Scott.
But the ritual.
They have red tape.
In order for the thing to be successful, they have to choose an object. They have to choose their death. And that's what...
Yeah.
I mean, again, it's the hand wavy. It's the thing I said at the beginning. It's like, no, it has to be done this way because... ... It has to be done this way.
Right.
The demon god under the earth's crust demands it.
With that big hand? The one with the big hand.
Yeah, with the cool like lava look inside his wrist.
Yeah.
Oh, love that.
That was actually pretty rad. And the way it ended was great because it was just like, yep, that's it. You kill the final two and the big hand comes out and you're done. Yeah.
No sequel. None able to be produced.
You know what else would have really been a problem here? Had this movie been PG-13, which at one point they were being pressured to try to do.
Oh, geez.
Big mistake. Would have been a huge mistake. Would have ruined the film. Yeah. Probably.
Would have ruined for sure.
Because part of what we need here is those tropes along with adult content and all to carry forward or else it's not the same trope. It's more, I don't know, it's more like mid-aughts PG-13 horror movies, which kind of weren't great. You know, there was a lot of stuff where it was like, oh, you gonna go see this scary thing? That's not that scary. It's not that bloody. It's not that whatever. We need like heads coming off. We need, gnarly moments that stick in your head.
We need people's backs getting pulled around.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Right. Hell yeah. Why that guy didn't get like, you know how this game, Dead Before Daylight, is really popular and they keep adding, you know, they put Nicolas Cage in there for all things. It's crazy.
Right.
I don't know why they don't put. Like, you know, put in that saw blade head guy or put in this.
What was it? Well, the Buckner family? Was that what the character's name was?
Yeah, they were the Buckners.
Yeah, I love that.
They made Pac-Man Fever back in the 80s. And then.
Yeah, they had in Garcia and they had Garcia patients. And I was trying to follow some of the sub stories too, because somebody put some care to some of that story, like the family. What was the story of patients? Was it mirroring what was going on when patients actually took Sigourney Weaver's character down at the end? Was she just going for any blood or was she actually a victim who is actually looking for vengeance? Because that's what I feel like she was doing. She was trying to take off the head of the corporate.
Oh, interesting.
Right? She was trying to fix things.
It was supposed to be somebody else, Jodie Foster. was supposed to
be. Oh, was going to be another.
That's
consideration.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't like that.
She fell out for some reason or had to change something, and so they got Sigourney. Okay. I think Sigourney Weaver's a great pick.
You never lose out when you get Sigourney Weaver,
yeah. Especially when you've already got a character named Dana, and all you can think of is there is no Zool, only Dana.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Or I'm sorry, the other way around. No Dana, only Zool. Let me get the quote right, but that's the.
I like the world where Dana takes control. I like it better.
We got a cool spinoff Ghostbuster.
Get out, Zool.
I need someone.
No Zools or Danas. Okay, yeah, yeah. None.
Yeah. I need someone to fix the trivia on IMDb for this movie.
Oh, okay,
it should read: Jamie Lee Curtis was considered for the role of director. The director.
That'd be good.
As it should also read, as well as Sylvester Stallone, Bruce Willis,
or Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yeah.
I could see her doing that too.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, she's the daughter of horror. She's daughter
well, plus
of
she's,
Psycho.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Halloween. She's the final. Yeah. She's the final girl in one of the.
That would have been perfect. But you know, Sigourney Weaver got some Your Aliens chops, and you know it fits. Oh, still fits. But
and plus, she's got an. I think you know if you had Jamie Lee Curtis talking off screen, I don't necessarily know that I would definitely pick her out. But God, I can pick out a Sigourney Weaver.
Yes.
Voice in a second.
Oh, for sure. Like, I thought Scott accidentally played a clip from Finding Nemo at the beginning.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, dude. I forgot. Her voiceover in, what is it, Nemo or the other one? I think it was the other one.
That was Nemo, wasn't it?
Was it Nemo?
It was Finding Dory. It was the sequel.
Oh, it was Finding Dory. That's right. Yeah, where they end up at the aquarium.
Yeah, she's the aquarium voice. But yeah, it was very similar. I thought the exact same thing when she was doing her diatribe over the mic.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it was a good call, and I like her. You know, the older she gets, the more I like her. It's weird. I don't know what's going on with her, but
I don't think I've ever changed my feelings on Sigourney Weaver. I think they're always the same.
I don't know.
I was watching Avatar.
I guess so. Sure. I mean, Avatar is what, 2 years, two, 3 years before this? 2009?
Right.
Something like that. She in the new one? The new Avatar? Never saw it.
She is. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That's cool. I like her. Her and Jim Cameron, they can't work to not.
You should, prop that up on your 4K TV and enjoy that. That's a great.
Yeah. Ooh,
enjoy good,
that.
It's a good use of your of your big screen and your audio and everything.
That's true. I don't know why we put it off. It's just on Plus, right? Disney Plus, I think.
Disney Plus, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
I'm such a slacker on the latest technologies. Ever since 4K came out, I got very excited. Got a 4K TV, and honestly, I just went meh. It's nice and all, but
watching shit on your phone, you know, whatever.
Get all right. Like the OLED stuff looks a lot better.
I'm gonna be all David Lynch 4K. On you on that one. It's not meant to be watched on a phone.
Yeah, don't watch it on a phone. I have a so ours is OLED, OLED, and
good. So you got the good stuff.
Yeah, and it is really great, but there are times where I'm just like, all right, I could go down there and fire this up there. Or I can just watch 6 episodes of this on my iPad in bed, you know?
I'll tell you, I hate myself. I said I would never grow old and stuck in my ways, but my rear projection, my screen project 100-inch screen projected movie screen I have, that's the way I like to watch
it. But it's a DLP or something projector.
It
right?
is. So it is like a DLP, 3D, DLP. Yeah. It's good stuff. And I love it.
I wouldn't say you're stuck in your ways. You just like what you like.
I have a certain flavor, right? Yeah. I have a flavor.
At least
and I like
you're
it.
Not watching it on your little 17-inch CRT monitor.
See, that's dumb. That's dumb.
Except you watched Film Sack last week that way, but sure.
Exactly. Well, that's different. It's Bull Durham. Trust me, you do not want to see Bull Durham on a 4K OLED. You do not
I don't want to see anything on any of the things
well,
you're
wait,
talking
Randy,
about.
Randy watched it on the big screen. How was that compared to...
That was great. That was a great
Did
transfer.
It enhance the experience, really? You think it did?
So.
You think so? No, it didn't.
I'm just amazed that we judge transfer quality.
Yeah.
You know, because like it should have been something that was solved. Like 20 years ago, it should have been something that was solved. And we're still in this place where I regularly hear from a friend like, don't watch the new whatever on HBO. It doesn't look good. You know,
wait till we get the AI doing it on its own. Just hey, real time. Something for you. Yep. Thanks, AI.
And then everyone will be mad because they don't like to have a computer control their their favorite movie.
I fixed Kevin Costner for you. I put Sylvester Stallone in the role. You're welcome.
Yeah.
Yeah. IMDb.
Yeah, IMDb, that trivia goes away immediately, because when it becomes possible in real time to just swap out faces and actors and voices anytime right. you want in real time, what's the right. point of having an IMDb trivia that says these people are almost cast? It's like, shut up, bitch, she's in there now. Woo! Right.
In the old world.
Yeah.
Right.
Do you think a spinoff or a sequel is possible at this point? Are we done hoping for that?
Absolutely. No, I mean, I would love to see the Japanese version.
But there's no Japan anymore. Like the Earth, the old gods. Oh,
but you can go back. You can go back.
Have a prequel.
A prequel would be great, actually. But then they'll feel the need to explain a lot of this stuff, and I don't know if I want it more explained than it already has been. I feel like even the fandom page does a little bit too much. I almost regret reading that stuff, but I feel like it does.
Go to the fandom page if you want to hang out with some hardcore fan people that are going to
exactly,
be
pretty much. Yeah.
I'm team Gibbet in this case, because we always say, well, more, let's have more. If it was good, let's have more. Right. But I don't know. Yeah. In this case, it feels like a really interesting blip that happened and everyone loved it and it's kind of legendary. Why? You know,
right. Where do you go? Because Evil Dead, the first one and the second one, and then we got into Army of Darkness. And once you get into Army of Darkness, you're like, well, you really can't do any better than this. Why are we doing more stuff? They're still doing more stuff, but man.
That new one's crazy.
Army of Darkness.
I saw that this year, that thing. If you want to see.
You still do it.
Yeah. If you want to see a thing that looks like Sam Raimi went back to college, and I mean this in a good way, like that primordial.
He keeps growing.
Dark horror business. And he didn't direct it; he just produced it. But
that new one
is the shit. It's good.
Yeah,
it's real good.
By the way, I just wrote down that I wanted to praise Kristen Connolly. She has a rough role in this movie. Like, it's maybe the hardest to play. Although Tim DeZarn has a crazy difficult role to play, and he does it so well. But like, Kristen Connolly is. She's Ellie Kemper, in this movie.
She's the straight man.
She's the straight.
And she's not copying. Ellie Kemper wasn't Ellie Kemper yet when this movie was made. So she's she's just like doing this amazing little thing where sometimes she looks questioning and sometimes pensive and so on. Mm-hmm. And she just nails it.
I think she's wonderful. Yeah, I think she's perfect for the role. I don't know why we don't see. I know she's in plenty of things, but it's not stuff I see. So I don't know why she's not in more stuff. She's just freaking great. Everybody else is fine. The New Zealand girl's eyes are too close together. There, I said it. They're just too close.
They kind of are.
Rude.
I don't think you should be. If you close both your eyes, your eyelashes shouldn't touch each other from across the nose bridge. That's what I'm saying. I mean, she's fine, whatever. And Brian was right. Ibbot warned me, says, try not to not hear her occasional New Zealand pop in, and it happened here and there.
I know. I kind of ruined it for you by telling you, oh, yeah, listen for her New Zealand accent. Right. Now you won't be able to unhear it.
Yeah, definitely.
Anna Hutchinson has been toiling in movies after this. Like, she's been making movies called things like Vengeance, A Love Story, Engaged to a Psycho, Killer Reputation.
But she's hilarious. Why is she doing that shit? She should be doing some comedy, man.
She starred in
Secrets at the Lake. It's like, I'm so sorry for this woman.
I don't know.
Needs to get out of that. She's hilarious.
She didn't strike me as particularly comedic in this. I mean, she had a couple moments.
That's the point. She's kind of a good straight man, but she still has the ability. She's got some pretty good timing and got some really good, just some great, great facial expressions that make her fun to play off of. I think she should stick with comedies.
Yeah. This is a good cast, though.
I can't tell you what to do, but I'm just saying I would like to see more and more comedy.
Yeah, you're
not my puppet.
Send her a text, and we'll see what we can get.
You're not my
her.
Puppet. Do what you do.
Do what you want to do, lady. What was I going to say? I wrote here. Oh, that's just the same point. I wrote get so much right, hard to crit. I think I meant criticize.
Oh, I thought you meant hard to roll a one.
I don't have a. I don't have a lot of stuff in here where I'm like, well, I wish they would have done that. or I wish this could have gone that way, or this character should have gone whatever. Like, I actually loved what's his name on his bike, thinking he's going to jump the ravine and slam it into the Tron wall.
Because we knew it was coming. It's like, oh no.
Yeah. Who knows it's there's the Tron wall there? Nobody except the bird, and they didn't see that. Right. So
that's like based on like that Stephen King dome, or that idea of being in a dome kind of thing.
I think the idea was that at some point you cross over into a place that isn't the actual. See, that's the thing. They don't want to asking too many questions, but it's like, is this all a mirage? Is that just a construct? You know, where does the edges of this video game go? But I mean,
it was taking inspiration from the horror theme of the dome, right? That is a horror theme.
I don't know. I mean, the dome's very different. The dome actually came down and landed and then trapped people in it. I read that book.
Yes.
And it chopped a cow in half, which was great.
It chopped a cow in half, which is great.
Yeah. While one of the characters is standing right next to it, and it's invisible, so you can't see it. But suddenly that cow just went.
And also one of the main themes in the Simpsons movie, if you haven't seen that. Good job.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Did they cut a
with the dome.
Did they cut a cow in half in that one? I don't remember.
Yeah. I remember now.
It did something. I remember there was something like
something happened. I may be confusing the two. Something happened there weird. But The Dome's a great book. The TV show a great TV show.
No.
So many Stephen King novels fall into that description.
They just should have stopped at season one. It's like they said, like they were, you know, heading towards a what would have been a satisfying ending, I think. And they said, we could probably do another season of this if we'd make a really quick right turn and don't go towards the ending. And that's what they did. And it just sucked.
Yeah, you know what's great to read? Things about Langoliers. No, it's not fun to watch? Langoliers.
Yeah, I feel the same way about reading things about needful things that are needful.
Yeah, yeah, needful things.
Things that are needful are so fun to read.
I actually kind of like that series. Is that on Hulu now?
There's a series?
Yeah. Is it that right? The Needful Things? Is that the one I'm thinking of?
Needful Things is a movie, right? Or wait.
Just a movie. Yeah. Langoliers had one season on Sci-Fi. I'm not seeing anything about a Needful Things series.
My biggest problem with Under the Dome was it was made for network television. Yes. And they toned a ton of it back. And it would have done. This is like same year as this, I think. No, 2013. That show would have been a much better take on Netflix or some hardcore HBO remake or something. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, you know, stuff you see with La Brea and Timeless and other things where it just, they have to do too many things to make it fit the network TV formula.
Yeah. And even when they get close and it's good, like Friday Night Lights and Hannibal are both great examples of this, but they all got cut short because those things don't last on network TV, so I don't know. Yeah. Under the Dome, redo it. Get in there, Stephen King.
I'm working on a new adaptation of Under the Dome.
Maybe get off Twitter.
That's a bad person.
Okay, so I just like him, actually.
Yeah.
can I just have another moment on Tim Dzarn as the guy on the outside that you meet before you go into the woods?
Harbinger.
I love that guy. Harbinger. Mordecai, right? Mordecai?
Mordecai. Yes.
That guy's great.
My own speakerphone.
Hilarious scene. Now, this is a guy with a great agent. He's been in Spider-Man and Fight Club and so on.
Yeah.
And he is just perfect in this movie. When they get to that ridiculous gas station, I was laughing out loud. It is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And he is just so freaking funny to me.
Yeah.
I wish they'd found more use for him in this movie.
In more movies. I remember him from Fight Club, was it? Let's see.
Yep. Red on Airline.
Yeah. Oh, did you say that? I'm sorry.
Oh,
I
really?
That.
I missed it too.
I missed it too.
Yeah, we all missed it. Sorry.
What if a red on air light flashes in a forest and nobody's there to hear it? Does it make
a sound?
Cast light?
Yeah, does it cast any light? Sorry about that. The other one I was thinking recently was I think Better Call Saul had a one shot or something. Anyway, that dude's face isn't. There's no way you don't know him. You see him and you go, "Oh shit, there he is." Uh-huh. And he's great. I love him. More of him, please. Before he dies, he looks very old.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Do you guys want to do some clips?
Did you make clips this week?
I did.
All right, sweet.
I don't want to blow your mind, sweet. But I did.
Are we gonna hear naked boobies?
You're not gonna hear them, but you may.
Are we gonna hear a husband bulge?
Husband bulge, you forgot about that. That's such a disgusting thing to think about, isn't it? Ugh.
You will actually hear a husband
and
bulge.
You know,
good. Yeah. That's all I was hoping.
Yeah, right. Yeah, weird.
Here goes. Let's start with this one about cabinets.
So you wanna come over Monday night? I'm gonna pick up some power drills, liberate my cabinets.
We didn't talk enough about how much
lubricate my cabinets.
Yeah. I love him so much. Or not lubricate. Oh, he said
Bradley Whitford, he's fantastic.
Yeah, I just
wits,
love him.
His dry wits is so good.
I love him. I think he said liberate, not lubricate.
I thought he said liberate, but I'm pretty sure. But you don't liberate your cabinets, you lubricate your cabinets. Can we hear it again?
Yeah, let's hear it again.
So you want to come over Monday?
Whoops, hold on.
So you want to come over Monday night? I'm going to pick up some power drills, liberate my cabinets.
Liberate
my cabinets. Yeah,
I guess you wouldn't lubricate your cabinets with power drills.
Liberate your cabinets is just taking the doors off, right?
Yeah, he's going to, because his wife, earlier in the conversation, he was talking about how his wife wants new cabinets and he's got to take the old ones down. So I think it was liberate.
And that's called liberating your cat. I guess I don't watch enough Fix It or Flip It.
I think he
never heard the term.
It was his own take. He's like, I'm going to take, it would be like saying, let's see, I'm going to take, I got this old Genesis. I'm going to take a screwdriver to it and liberate it from its RAM or something. I think it's
No. The running joke was that they had been baby proofed.
Right.
And so he's just saying he's going to
take the doors off.
He's going to liberate them from their imprisonment by the baby proof.
Oh,
okay. All right.
Well, that makes sense, I guess. Here's a reference to an old 80s commercial.
I don't know. Who gave you these? Who taught you about these?
I learned it from you, okay? I learned it from watching you!
I wondered how many people got that in theaters.
Yeah.
Hopefully a lot.
Yeah. Good. I know. So good. People of a certain age got it, and other people are like, wait, why is she so angry so quickly?
Yeah, and why did he laugh after, and what's the deal?
That's a really useful clip for like TMS.
Yeah, it's not bad. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I learned it from you. All right, here's a big bong thing.
Statistical fact. Cops will never pull over a man with a huge bong in his car. Why?
We're not going to find out, I guess. Why?
Why?
Filling in the cracks with concrete.
It's filling in the cracks with concrete.
I don't remember the reference there.
I don't either, but it's really funny. Yeah.
These clips are making him into an insufferable character, and I didn't find it that at all while watching.
Yeah, if you do it, you isolate him, and he gets, he takes over. In fact, here he is again.
It's like filling the cracks with concrete, school.
He was totally the Shaggy of this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Here he is again.
You think it's barter gas?
Barter gas. He was cracking me up.
Oh, yeah.
Clearly, I liked him or I wouldn't have recorded him so much. All right, here's that guy we were just talking about, Tim Desarne, getting pissed.
Well, I've been here since the war.
Which war?
You know damn well which war.
Damn, dude.
You know damn well which war.
I mean, what do you think he meant? Probably Vietnam.
Vietnam. 2013?
Yeah. Probably Vietnam at the age he was.
Yeah.
Pioneered something? Here's this.
It was pioneer days. People had to make their own interrogation rooms.
He made me laugh.
Me too. Like after the war, there was a bunch of war talk. Which war were you in? The Civil War? You know, they were just like... Mm-hmm. That guy just is nothing but jokes.
Yeah, it's all jokes. Yeah. Here's a gross one. Is this him, though? I'm not sure it's him. But here's what I wrote. I wrote gross joke, so enjoy.
Do we pipe it in, or do you want to do it orally?
Oh, ask me that again, only slower.
You're a pig.
Oh, yeah. Freaking.
I love Amy Acker.
She's great, dude.
She is great.
Put her in everything. Well, I guess Joss Whedon does, but put her in everything else, too.
Yeah. Unfortunately, somebody put her in that horrible X-Men Fox TV show called Gifted, and that thing had so many problems.
Yeah, that was a poopski show.
Yeah.
Never to be thought of again, hopefully. Lambs, what? Well, here's this.
The lambs have passed through the gate.
Oh, yeah, him. He's doing his thing.
He starts getting dark. Yeah. It's so good.
And here's where I laughed out loud because this is just too good.
I'm still on speakerphone, aren't I?
I'm still on speakerphone. They did a good job of that stuff. Like, because he's clearly, he loves being that soothsaying, don't go up there if I were you.
Totally.
Whatever. But then they're just dicking with him at corporate. I love it. Gross, I wrote.
I want to understand the glory of the pain like Matthew, but cutting the flesh makes him have a husband's bulge, and I do not get like that.
A husband's bulge.
A husband's bulge.
That's too good.
Your husband's bulge lasts for 4 hours or more, consult a doctor.
Now, in some ways, this movie's way ahead of its time because they did a line that I thought only kids use today, and I'll play it and then we'll talk about it. So here it is.
The Buckners pulled a W.
The Buckners pulled a W. This is what they do now. Oh, it's all L's and W's. Yeah. You notice this?
Oh, it's been around. It's been around.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not like now.
I've known it for a long time, yeah.
It feels like it's way bigger now. Like
it's
all
just getting used a lot more now, sure.
Yeah. Teenagers, man. It's what they do. All right. Yes, something about zombies.
I had zombies too.
Yes, you did. Yes, you had zombies.
That poor girl. She didn't understand the assignment, the rules.
Yeah.
This is a great name for something.
Why is Jules suddenly a celebutard?
What is a celebutard?
Like, it's basically celebrity paired with the word that we don't anything. Say.
The R word.
Like, it's like
R
word. It was like
the Kardashians.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But why did they say that about her? Because she was dancing?
That's the way she was acting, because she was acting like she was an airhead, right?
Okay.
That's the way of basically saying she's an airhead.
But that was some of that's artificial, right? She was getting pheromone.
Yeah, all of it was artificial, right?
Yeah, I guess so. This part made me laugh, too, where she gets cold outside.
I'm chilly.
They were all hoping for sexy time, and she was cold.
Yeah, yeah.
Pheromone mist. We played this earlier.
Engaging pheromone mists.
What have you been up to?
How to dismember that guy with the trowel. What have you been up to?
It's pretty good. And finally, how you do sacrifice.
You tie someone to a stone, get a fancy dagger and a bunch of robes.
Yeah, he's not wrong. He's not wrong.
It's just funny how, you do isolate him out and he seems horrible, but in context of the film, he's great.
He's great. He made the film better, in my opinion. Now this. Whoops, that's not it. I'm on the wrong thing. Hold on. There we go. The film sack checklist. A long tradition begins now. Bloody blowhole? Check.
Oh, yeah.
Richard Jenkins is a potty mouth? Check.
Mm-hmm. Boy is he.
Yeah. And see, had they known where Hemsworth was going to be in a year, they might have kept him around instead of the stoner dude. Check. Mm-hmm. Star Trek connections, obvious one, George Kirk, but what else is there, Randy? Got any other?
Yeah, we got a couple other little things going on here, you know, just proving our point that there's always a connection, right?
Yeah.
So Dan Payne, who is briefly the Matthew Buckner character in the, I don't know, if historical flashback or what have you, was in Star Trek Beyond. We also, by the way, saw Dan Payne before on Watchmen, bit role in that movie. Yeah. Tim Dzarn, our grizzled weirdo, Mordecai in this movie, he was in several different Star Trek episodes. He was in an episode of The Next Generation, an episode of Deep Space Nine, an episode of Voyager. The guy makes a good alien, right?
Yeah.
We also saw him previously on Gone in 60 Seconds.
I don't remember
what role in that movie
did.
I wanted to call out a dialogue editor here because I just think this is such an interesting career. You know, someone who sits and puts together dialogue and edits it so that it you're hearing it exactly when you see it and so forth. There's a guy named Mike Zachmeister.
Zachmeister.
That's his actual name. And he did the dialogue editing on this movie, and he also was the dialogue editor for First Contact, Insurrection, and Nemesis, right? The TNG trio. And I think that's just a really cool thing. And by the way, he was also the dialogue editor for like seven other FilmSack films. Hard Rain, Paycheck, Tank Girl, The Italian Job. This guy, like, he's a really serious dialogue editor.
Yeah, he gets around, man. I'm going to, he sounds like, hey, who's bringing the beer, dude, to the party?
Zachmeister. It's the Zachmeister. Yeah.
That's great. Oh my gosh. He just invoked what's his name and I hate him. All right, moving on.
Rob Schneider.
It's okay. Can't stand
you
him.
Can hate him.
Drives me nuts.
Were you ever supposed to love him?
I mean, have you ever seen a movie you liked with him in it? Name one.
Well, no.
He is who he is.
Yeah, he definitely is who he is.
It's not like he came in swinging one thing and then started swinging something else. Nope, he's always been.
I like his daughter's singing voice. She's really good. What's her name?
L. King.
L. King. She's
X's really, and O's. She's so good.
Really talented. Yeah. Thanksgiving at that house. All right, let's move on to soundtrack. Great. I give it a G for great for what it needs to be. It is a combination of horror music and I don't know, just all fit. Didn't have a problem with it. Didn't stand out, but you know, wasn't in the movie's way, which is nice.
Yeah.
Let's get to that social media post where you guys sum things up. We're going to limit you to 280 characters. That's the rule. And we're going to start this
How
week.
Arbitrary.
I know, right? I just don't know where it came from. We'll also be arbitrary about choosing who goes first, and we'll start with Randy.
The Cabin in the Woods. Roses are red. Violets are purple. Because to me, that color looks purple, not blue.
Mm.
Hey, we got to see one naked lady, though, so I'm good. Yeah. How about you?
Yeah.
it meets the requisite one naked lady R rating. Perfect.
Yep, that's right. Yep. Exactly.
And that is what it is now, right? You can do the naked. If you've got a topless lady, you're going to go R. But you can do like two F-bombs before you're R now, I think. And you can kill a lot of stuff.
It's always been kind of fluid because the rating board, they make those decisions. It's kind of like a judgment call.
Yeah. But I just remember, like, what was it? Clash of the Titans when we were younger. I think we even did that movie here.
Yeah.
That had boobs, multiple boobs and butts. And then that shit was PG.
So many man butts and transformative penises.
Yeah. So when PG-13.
Zeffirelli's Romeo and Juliet, I think, shows like something even more, you know, blue in these days. And
with a fuzzy Virginia, that's what you get there.
That's right.
Fuzzy Virginia.
Exactly.
But the thing is, I'm uncomfortable. When PG-13 came along, I thought PG-13 would carry forward and that would be the new, that's where you can do two boobs in a butt. But no, that stopped. It's like PG-13, no boobs. It's got to be R. And I don't know when that changed. I mean, I'm sure I could go back and watch that movie, that MPAA movie, and find out when this switched.
Yeah.
But when did we become, we're totally, let's have a big bloody mess. Let's go ahead and swear a lot, but let's not see a boob.
Violence, but don't show us any boobies or nudity. No, sir.
I thought a lot about how easily you could make Oppenheimer a PG-13 movie. Like, it would take very little editing to make it a PG-13 movie. And then, like, I'll bet you there's a bunch of teachers in high schools that would show that movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Absolutely. But my understanding is there's some kind of gnarly sex scene or something with Florence Pugh and Jim
Bob. Pew.
I don't know. I still haven't seen it. Yeah. So I don't know. Yeah.
There is some steamy, sexy sex.
It is, yeah. And it's close up. And if you see it in IMAX, it's huge. But
they're huge. I don't know if they rate it based on that, but that's interesting.
You got to love a huge pudenda. You got to love a huge.
Big pudenda.
Huge.
All right. Pudenda. Nicely said. Let's move now to the alternate titles, okay?
This was just handed to me. This is great.
Here are what the alternate titles were. It was almost called Pinhead Sues Saw Face for Copyright Infringement, but they took that one out and decided instead with The Adventure of Dr. Unicorn Guts.
Ibit, do you feel attacked?
Yes, a little bit. A little bit.
But, I feel attacked. Attacked.
Yeah.
I feel a little attacked. Usually he just forgets you.
I know. No, today, no.
Oh, did I forget both of you? Shit.
Yeah. Right, today, both forgot Brian's. Both of us. That's past
Randy's apparently was good enough.
Is this how it feels every week?
Damn.
Yeah.
That was not.
Now you know how, you know, why I
don't, cry I don't like being on this side of the
cry in my pillow every Sunday like this night. Side
of how broken is Scott's brain on a Sunday morning?
I think Scott needs a real checklist.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's go. Yeah. Dog, frog, barrel, chicken. What is the thing they made Trump do? What is it called? Cognitive whatever.
The cognitive test.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Radio, social media post, chicken, people. Fart face, right. People,
computer. Yeah.
Let's go back. Now let's go back in time and do Brian Dunaway's thing.
Oh, do I get to do one today?
Yeah, you do.
Sweet, the cabin in the woods, like making out with a moose wolf's head mounted on the wall of the cabin on a dare while high on piped in horny mist. Careful, you might end up with a husband's bulge. # don't do drugs.
Horny mist.
Nicely done. Mm-hmm.
Horny mist.
Finally, Brian Ibbett.
The cabin in the woods. For our next ritual, we'll sacrifice a brain, an athlete, a basket case, a princess, and a criminal, and it'll be detention in the woods.
Nah.
I thought it might be like Donkey cabin Kong Country or something.
Oh, I like that.
Mm-hmm. What?
I like
that. We'll sacrifice a plumber, a Donkey Kong.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
A princess.
Yeah, those are all the Mario tropes.
I was going Breakfast Club, Randy. Come on.
That's what I was going with.
I got you.
Here, brother.
What do we have now?
Aren't you guys glad you went back for that one?
I'm really glad we did.
We could have let Scott just keep going.
Yeah, really. I'm glad we went back. No, that's good. This is like a prequel that didn't need more explanation. It's fantastic. Right. Let's do some emails and texts here. We got an email from Retlaw7. See him all the time in our chat and other places.
Walter backwards.
Yep. He says, ever going to do Temple of Doom? Screaming, nagging lady who's the only woman in the film. Short round, dirty open heart surgery, swashbuckling. Yes, what's not to like? I know Scott kind of holds Indiana Jones as sacred untouchables, but I was watching them. Oh. That's not true, actually. For the first time with my 9-year-old, and I got to say they're pretty ripe for sacking. Love the show, bro. Retlaw. I mean, we just did.
Especially, too.
We did Crystal Skull, obviously. That was an easy.
Yeah, yeah.
You watch Temple of Doom with your 9-year-old. Wow. I'm just like,
that's intense.
Shocked.
I love Temple of Doom. Watched it recently. We just did on Film Sack the third one, Final Crusade, or Last Crusade. Did I just watch that on my own? Shit.
You might have watched it on your own.
We haven't done any Indiana Jones.
No, we did Crystal Skull for Film Sack. I thought you were talking about the last one you watched.
Hold on.
Have you watched Dial of Destiny? Last Crusade.
I have not seen Dial of Destiny.
Like early on.
Okay.
Hold on.
I love Dial of Destiny.
Yeah,
I really liked it too.
We
totally did Crystal Skull. We have not done
Crystal Skull. We did Dark Crystal. Yes, we did. Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull. Yes.
Okay.
Film Sack Quarter.
I thought I was drunk. I just remember us talking about the CGI beaver or prairie dogs at the beginning.
No.
I feel really strongly like we sacked Last Crusade.
I'm pretty sure we did Last Crusade.
We didn't do it.
We just talked about it that much.
I guess so. I don't sacred cow any of this. I'm happy to watch any of them. So let's do it.
Sacred cow.
I mean,
it feels like now that we've done Crystal Skull, the next easy target would be Temple of Doom.
Yeah. Sure. That's what you got. I love Temple of Doom, so I'm an unapologetic fan of the entire series.
But we know
except
that Temple
for
of Doom isn't the best one, so we don't mind second that. Come on.
Yeah, it's not the best, but it's not as bad as everyone says. I enjoy it. I like it a lot. And I think
We'll have to wait until we second to find out.
Back in the day, people thought Short Round was a liability to that movie. I think he is a strength of it. I think the movie's better for it. Because his nice little performance. Anyway, the point is, we're happy to do whatever. But this did bring up something in my head. I wanted to ask this question. For me, 100% the most sure I've ever been that we haven't sacked a movie that we did sack came up recently with, Smokey the Bandit. I was sure with my whole body and mind that we had never sacked Smokey and the Bandit.
That was Film Sack 95. Yeah. And have you also had the experience of then listening to it, being sure you didn't?
No, but I should. I'm kind of scared to do that. It's kind of scary, right?
It's like watching a video that you don't remember. I don't remember ever being doing this thing. Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's scary. Yeah. So I don't even know if I want to do that. But is there one for you guys where you were just like, we haven't done that, but we have done it. Not ones that we want to do or thought we've done, but ones that we absolutely did, but you don't remember
every week.
Every week.
Week. For me, it's way more the vice versa. Being sure that we've done something that we really haven't done. There's very few that I can't think of any that you could say we did and I don't remember doing.
Yeah, I guess it's the other way. Same problem, just flipped all the time.
Almost every day of my life, I'm like, and when I go and listen, I just listen the first few minutes. I'm always amazed. It's such a surreal feeling. Like my most recent one was Lethal Weapon 2. I kind of knew we sacked it, but I didn't remember a word. Like I didn't remember anything about Lethal Weapon 2.
I remember that I watched the wrong Lethal Weapon.
Yeah, guess what? We've done Lethal Weapon 1, but only one of us did for that week.
Exactly.
We can count it. But 621 movies, it's a lot, man. It's a lot.
That was FilmSack 99, by the way. And I guess I was already so excited about FilmSack 100 that I just kind of like lost it in my my reckoning. So then I'm like listening to the first few minutes of our Lethal Weapon 2 episode. And I'm like, this is surreal. That sounds like me.
Yeah. I know. Isn't that weird? And also, when you go back that long, you go back to like the pre-100 days, we all have a higher voice. It's weird.
We do.
Yeah, we all sound younger.
Like, this is AI, right? Yeah. I'm not listening to a real thing. This is.
I was 120 pounds heavier, so everything I was like, and then.
I can kind of hear it a little bit. Like you have a different resonance. It's kind of like the new Post Malone album sounds different than his last one because he lost all this weight before making the new one. Yep. You can hear it a little bit. But in my case, I'm happy that I've gotten lower. I don't want to be higher. Higher sucks.
Agreed. Yeah.
So
hey, you guys, it was time to do Film Sack.
Yeah.
That's how it used to sound to us. Yeah.
So we sound like the fake Scott Fletcher voice.
Bull Durham.
Bull Durham. Real quick, Kroll is getting, I don't know if you guys heard, they're remaking Kroll, and if that happens, we got to do some shit around that, because that's our first episode.
For sure, that's our first ever.
Can you imagine, though, a remade Kroll? It just seems insane to me that they're even talking about it. But they are. Let's get to this text. This is from Tom, not our Tom, different Tom. I have the perfect little music parody album for Brian. So this is for Brian Ibbett's songs. Mm-hmm. He says it should be called Original Motion Picture Sound Sacks.
Sound Sacks. That's where you nailed it. Right there.
Sound Sacks. Yes. It's not bad.
No, it's good.
Yeah, it's not bad at all.
Original Motion Picture Sound Sack.
One from
Jeff. It's a little long, but
sure. It's a little wordy, isn't it?
Wordy, but I can go with that. Yeah.
Jeff Smith wrote in, says, hello, Film Sack. This is Jeff Smith, not of Bone fame. I want to. Yeah. Oh, and that guy's speaking of Jeff Bone, the cartoonist. Yeah. He's recovering from his heart attack, and it looks like he's going to be okay. So,
good
news on that front. He says, "I just want to mention something funny Scott said in the Flash episode. I think he meant to refer to the actress as Wish Tessa Thompson, like you ordered her from Wish.
Oh, from Wish.
And she is not quite the same quality." But Scott called her Make-A-Wish Tessa Thompson.
Make-A-Wish.
As if she was given a role in the movie because she was terminally ill. Thanks for the laughs.
Good idea.
Intentional or unintentional. Jeff, I did mean that. So thank you for noticing. I didn't mean that she got her dying wish to be on the cast of the thing. But she did remind me a lot of that girl in Flash. So.
Yeah.
All right. Before I get out of here, quick note about Patreon. We got a brand new guy this week. His name is Dan Geezer. Or Geyser. I don't know how you say it.
Change it to Zachmeister.
Dan Zachmeister. He joined us on our Patreon.
Making the copies.
Yep, exactly. Patreon.com/FilmSack is where he joined. You'll never get commercials. You'll get pre-show content every week, monthly host specials, movie art in the mail, some other cool stuff. Who's doing the special this month?
Who's October?
Oh, you are, Scott.
No, it's Randy Deluxe.
Randy Deluxe. So that'll be very soon, sometime this month. But also go back. If you did it now, you can get all the previous ones. Like none of that stuff goes away. It will stay there in perpetuity, but only if you're a patron. So sign up today, patreon.com/filmsack, and show your support to your favorite film-based show today. Our next film will be The Conjuring from 2013. Let's get some ghosty house bullshit going. I can't wait. Gonna
this
be
feels fun. Like it's gonna scare the crap out of me.
Yeah,
I mean, I've seen it, but it's I think it scared the crap out of me the first time I saw it. So,
got that Vera Farmiga, you got your
Patrick Wilson,
Owlman.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure. Yeah. Didn't this kick off the career of director James Wan? Is it
no? He directed Saw, like the first Saw.
Oh, that's what it was.
That's where we get him.
That's right. James Wan went on to do all kinds of cool shit, didn't he? He did a MCU. Oh no, Aquaman, Furious 7, one of the best Fast and Furious movies. He's great. Oh, and The Nun 2, he just finished.
Oh yeah,
gotta watch The Nun 2.
I think Furious 7 might be my favorite Fast and Furious movie.
It's real good.
Mm-hmm. I need to think about that.
Yeah.
That's a, it is. It's real good.
That's a good question, Randy.
I think I've only seen like two of them. The one we watched here and then Tokyo Nights or Tokyo Drift.
He
executive produced Tokyo Swamp Thing, that Swamp Thing series that didn't last very long. That was really good. He was executive producer on that. Anyway, we like that guy is the point.
Sure.
And the Conjuring universe has spun off a bunch of stuff like that. Annabelle spinoff, Insidious. Isn't that a spinoff of The Conjuring, I think?
In the same universe?
Or something like that, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then...
Cool.
Did he do Saw 10? Oh, just producer, not directing.
Saw X.
Yeah, Saw X, which is getting good reviews. Kevin Grutert. And it looks like Scott Summers on the front with some kind of broken eyeball thing.
I've never seen The Conjuring yet. I have definitely seen the movie poster many, 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 many times because it's got this funny shaped tree and a noose hanging from it. And it always makes me stop and go, hey, what are you doing with that rope?
Right.
What are you going to do there?
Yeah.
I'm of the opinion that all good, the more your horror movie is set in the 70s, the more scary the game is the movie is
for sure. It's an uncomfortable decade for whatever reason.
Yeah. Can't even put my finger on why. It's just, I lived through a chunk of it.
Energy
we all did.
Crisis, Vietnam. Yeah, what's the deal?
I guess so. What part more? Of it is like there's technology, but it's all analog. So it's, you can't fake through phone stuff or internet things. It's just still scary. I don't know. And there were all the serial killers in the 70s. That's when those guys thrived.
Oh, serial killers were awesome during the 70s.
They loved it.
In a moment.
Yeah, because they could get away with it in a way that you couldn't do today. And that's DNA was
they
new.
Got notoriety. Like, and now, if you're a serial killer, you know, the deaths are talked about, but you're not given any sort of credit on the news to dissuade people from doing it for the attention.
Yeah, definitely more now like that. But like watching, Mindhunter is a great example of this. It's like, could that show would not be nearly as good if it was set now. Like, you got to put this shit in the 70s. So that's why we're excited. The Conjuring, the 70s edition. That's coming next week, 2013. So where is that? Max, probably, because that's where everything is right now.
Yep, that's okay. We are stuck on Max for a long time.
Max is stuck on me.
I was going to go Huey Lewis in the News, but I like the Band-Aid correction. I think that's good, too.
That's pretty good. Well, I would like to tell people in the meantime before next week, please enjoy this short Sacktober season that we're going to have because it's the most fun we have all year, and we hope you have fun with us. In the meantime, go to filmsack.com for all the stuff you might need. Leave us reviews where you get your shows. That's it. It's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Engaging pheromone mists.
Oh, I'm horny.
Get more at frogpants.com.
You think it's barter, guess?
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.